Hello and welcome to the TES podcast. I'm Senior Editor Simon Locke and you're listening to the second episode in our two-part wellbeing special. These two bonus episodes contain conversations I've had recently with experts in the field of student and staff mental health, during which I asked them to explain what actually works when it comes to wellbeing. In today's episode, I meet Jamie Smith, Director of Mental Health and Wellbeing in Schools at the Anna Freud Centre, and ask her what leaders can do to rejuvenate and retain their teachers after a fraught 18 months. If you missed episode one, I caught up with Willem Kuyken, Professor of Mindfulness and Psychological Sciences at Oxford University, to discuss the wellbeing challenges facing schools in September and how leaders can hope to overcome them. Both guests will be speaking at this year's EACT Ideas Conference in partnership with TES on the 7th of October. To find out more and register for this free event, visit eact.org.uk/conference. Jamie Smith began her career teaching in inner London secondary schools before moving to a local authority and focusing her attention on young children at risk of exclusion. Having also worked for the NSPCC, Jamie joined the Anna Freud Centre, setting up both the Mental Health and Wellbeing in Schools programme and the Schools in Mind network, the latter of which has now engaged over 29,000 school professionals. Here she reveals some of the most effective strategies leaders can use when it comes to staff wellbeing. Hi, Jamie. Thank you ever so much for inviting us over to the Anna Freud Centre today for an in-person interview, which is an absolute treat after an 18-month stint of Zoom calls and all that entails. How are you today?
I'm okay, thank you. Yeah, it's lovely to see you.
Yeah, for the benefit of the listeners, we're sat, we're being recorded on video as well. We've got some lights and it has definitely got a little bit of a sort of Frost versus Nixon vibe.
Yeah.
It's quite intense.
It feels intense. I'm hoping you're not going to be scary.
I'm going to try to put you completely at ease.
Good.
And you can tell me how I'm getting on.
I will.
If it gets too intense, just kick me or something. I don't know.
Excellent.
But I wanted to start with your career. We're here to talk about the well-being of teachers. And obviously that's how you started your career. And do you want to sort of give an assessment of how well-being's moved on since then? And was it a sort of explicit focus when you were a teacher, like staff well-being? What was it like for you?
Yeah, so I loved being a teacher and I loved being in the classroom. And teaching is such a rewarding job. It's just brilliant to be in the classroom with children, but it's definitely physically and emotionally draining. It's a challenging role. No, I don't think wellbeing was a focus for me when I was in the classroom. I think things have moved on. I think it's worth noting that I trained quite a long time ago, but for all of my friends and all of the people that I trained with together, there's only two people now left teaching in the classroom. And I think it's just such a tragedy because I just feel that we are losing brilliant teachers, people that are excellent in the classroom, great school leaders every year because of that, because we're not prioritising staff wellbeing. We're not thinking about the wellbeing of our teachers and our school leaders. And it's just such a loss. It's a loss to the classroom, it's a loss to the education profession, and it's a loss to children and young people that won't benefit from those brilliant teachers. So, I don't think there was enough focus. I think that we're starting to see more focus today. I'm excited that we're talking about staff wellbeing today. It's the start of a conversation, but we've got a long way to go, I think.
Was that a factor in why you left teaching, if you don't mind me asking?
There were lots of factors in why I left.
This dream job come along.
I love teaching and I always say that I'm going to go back to it and I hope that I do one day. There were lots of reasons why I left. But yeah, I definitely did find it a heavy workload, working the evenings, working at the weekends. And it's hard work being a teacher. It's challenging, definitely.
Is that, you mentioned workload there, is that a factor for you? Do you think that's the sort of standout thing that we should be addressing in conversations like this?
So I think that there are many factors that are impacting on staff wellbeing, but I think workload is one that we hear time and time again. I think, as I said, it's enormously challenging being a teacher. It's a tough job. And we know that actually, even pre-pandemic, we know that teaching had one of the highest rates of workplace depression, anxiety, stress levels. So teaching has always been challenging and the workload has always been high. And I think the pandemic has really added to that hugely. I think we saw a recent NEU poll that said that teachers after the last year are just feeling exhausted, completely exhausted, but also not valued at all. And workload is coming out time and time again. In that poll, it said that 70% of people felt that their workload had increased as a result of the pandemic, and 95% were worried about the impact on their well-being. So I think if teachers are telling us that, if school leaders are telling us that, then we need to do something. We need to act. It's really concerning, isn't it, that workload and stress levels are that high. And I think if you think about the day-to-day job of a teacher, teachers are carrying a huge amount. They're carrying and processing a range of competing and complex emotional issues. They're teaching and learning. They're working with children that are bringing a huge emotional load. They're working with parents and carers. And then there's the administrative load. There's the culture of performance and inspection and accountability. So there's a huge amount that we're asking of our teachers and school leaders. So I think we need to maybe stop and take a step back and think about how can we rebalance the profession? How can we make sure that it feels manageable to be a teacher and school leader and we keep these excellent teachers in the classroom?
Do you think the pandemic may have signaled a sort of a change in the way people think about well-being in education? Do you think it almost feels like perhaps we, not wanting to sort of over-egg it, but maybe we hit rock bottom during the pandemic and maybe this is a turning point? Do you think that might be the way things are heading? Fingers crossed.
So I think the pandemic has been enormously disruptive to education in a whole range of ways. I think we know that the pandemic has significantly impacted on children and young people's mental health. We've seen risk factors exacerbated already. And I think that we've seen children and young people that have experienced grief and loss and isolation and rising anxiety and low mood. I think we don't know the full impact of the pandemic yet. I think there's a long way to go. We will until we really find out what the impact will be for children and young people and for education. I think we know that some groups have been disproportionately impacted by the pandemic. We know that, and evidence tells us that young people who are living in poverty, LGBTQ+ young people, Black and minoritized young people, girls, young women have been disproportionately impacted by the pandemic, and they're all bringing that to school. So schools are carrying that extra kind of emotional load and they're absorbing some of that. So I think the pandemic has brought with it enormous challenges for the education system. I think it's also important just to stop and reflect for a moment and just think about what schools have dealt with for the last 18 months, because there's been a lot of rhetoric, I think, in the media about school closures. And I think it's important to say that schools never closed. Teachers and school leaders were open throughout, and they were prioritising children, and they were teaching. They were open to key worker children and to vulnerable children. And they were really being that place of safety and stability and routine, and actually being an anchor for communities and keeping children going and families going, not just through education, but being a trusted source of support, a trusted adult to talk to. We saw schools feeding children through the pandemic. Schools play such an important role. And teachers and school leaders have been carrying that for a year, many of them without a break. They kept going through half term and kept going through Easter. And I just don't know if we've recognised enough what teachers and school leaders did to support society through the pandemic. And so to answer your point, is it a turning point? I hope so. I really hope that we can step back now and think, okay, this is where we've got to. What can we do differently now? What can we learn from the pandemic? What might we keep? Because some things have been good. Some things have changed for the better. Some children had a positive experience. But what can we learn and what can we do differently? And how can we think differently about what we want our schools to be? How can we balance schools and embed good mental health at the heart of our schools through our curriculum to support our teachers, to support our children? How can we balance mental health with education attainment? How can we equip teachers properly with the resources that they need, with the training that they need? What can we do differently now to make sure that schools are mentally healthy? So I hope it's a turning point. I feel that there's an opportunity because there is a spotlight on mental health. We are talking about it. You and I are talking about it. It's in the media. I think that the government are starting to talk about it. We see some noises from DfE around the wellbeing charter, for example. So I hope that we're going to start thinking about how we prioritise mental health for schools.
That's interesting. You sort of said you think things have moved on from when you were perhaps a teacher. If this is a sort of timeline of staff wellbeing, what improvements have you seen in those years up until pre-pandemic? Were we making progress, do you think? Were initiatives starting to sort of take hold a little bit?
So I think we're at the start of the journey, definitely. I mean, I would say there are some schools that are just doing incredible work. I mean, really brilliant work. And I think, so I'm really privileged to work at the Anna Freud Centre. I work with lots of amazing schools. And we have a network of many schools. And we have panels of schools that we think are really leading the way in terms of mental health. I think they're pioneering, actually. They're making a real difference. And so what we try to do at the Anna Freud Centre is grab those bits of learning and disseminate widely and share, because I want to take good practice that I see in a school and tell everyone about it so that a school that's doing something brilliant in Cornwall can share it with a school in Sheffield, for example. So I think there's some amazing work taking place. I do. And we've got lots of case studies on our website, for example, and we try to share as widely as we can. And there are individual schools that are leading the way that we can learn from. Absolutely. But I think we are at the start of the journey in terms of maybe kind of whole system change.
You mentioned the wellbeing charter, actually, and I guess that ties into that systemic change you're talking about. How do you see it? Is this something that's a bit tokenistic, or is it something that's signalling a shift in the way perhaps the DfE might start to think, perhaps how Ofsted might start to operate?
Yeah, I mean, I really welcome the Wellbeing Charter. I think I'm really pleased to see that there's a public commitment from DfE, from Ofsted, around staff wellbeing and prioritising staff wellbeing. I think that's brilliant. I think that's a start of a conversation. I'm also really pleased that there was collaboration across the sector in the Staff Wellbeing Charter. So we saw the voices of teachers and school leaders, the voices of unions. We saw mental health professionals. In fact, we at the Anna Freud Centre were involved in that work. My CEO, Professor Peter Fonagy, was on the expert advisory group leading on mental health content alongside other mental health professionals. So I'm pleased to see that we've got that collaboration and that we have a starting of a conversation and a shared understanding around staff wellbeing and what we want for staff wellbeing. We want what we want our schools to look like. So that feels good that we've got that. I really hope lots of schools sign up in September. I hope that schools see it as something that they can pick up and they can kind of, you know, put a marker in the sand and say, we are a staff wellbeing school, and share that with their community, tell their parents and carers that that's what's a foundation for them, prioritising staff wellbeing. And I hope that the charter gives people some strategies to work on, some ideas to develop their own staff wellbeing strategies in their setting. So I think there's lots of opportunity. There's some fantastic ideas in the charter. And I know that DfE are committed to evaluating that work. So I look forward to seeing how that looks and how schools take that up and how it grows and builds. And, you know, I'm hoping it will become a movement. But yeah, let's see.
Yeah. Do you think, is there enough support for schools, do you think, to sort of see this, if they sign up for the charter, they subscribe to the 9 kind of objectives within it, is there enough support for schools to sort of make that work? Or is it just, I mean, asking schools to do things that will add to their workload sort of undermines the objective of a wellbeing charter, doesn't it? Do you think there's enough support out there?
Well, I think there are some really fantastic objectives that DfE have committed to in the charter. And some of them are things that that we at the Anna Freud Centre really welcome and really want to support. So I'm really pleased to see, for example, there's information in there about workload reduction. I think that's really important. And thinking about how we can reduce workloads for staff and how we can think about what schools can do to take some of that workload off. I'm really pleased to see that there's some information there about better access to resources for teachers and school leaders about their well-being and there's lots of information out there that I think teachers can't access that would be really supportive for them. So at the Anna Freud Centre, we have the Mentally Healthy Schools website, and it has a whole range of free resources around staff wellbeing and how to support staff wellbeing on an individual level, on the staff level. So I'm pleased that that's being signalled in the charter. I'm also really pleased to see some information around measurement. So for us at the Anna Freud Centre, that's important, that we start supporting schools to understand the issues, to understand what staff need and what they want. And so there's something in the charter which is something that we support as well around having a staff annual survey, a wellbeing survey, when you ask your staff, you know, check in on how they're doing, see what's driving good mental health, what's driving poor mental health, seeing about their capacity. As you say, asking them, are they equipped with what they need to deliver their roles? And I think, so once we understand what staff need, then we can start to look at the solutions. So I really welcome the idea of measurement in schools and understanding what staff want and need. I also see in the chart there's something around training. Absolutely. We need to better equip our teachers and school leaders with good mental health training. And not just for people that have a responsibility, but for everyone, in fact. I think we need to improve mental health literacy across the whole education workforce. I would really like to see mental health content in initial teacher training. I'd like to see it in the early career framework. I'd like to see more training around mental health. And I think teachers and school leaders would like to see that as well. So we do need to be equipping our staff more with the resources and knowledge they need so that they can effectively support mental health and wellbeing in their schools and effectively support their own staff and children and young people.
That's interesting you mentioned this, the measurement side, actually. I guess for schools going into September, there'll be some, you know, you talk about things going into ITT training about mental health. That's a sort of, you know, that's a long way down the road. That's, you might not see the impact of that or changing your curriculum. But are there some really sort of quick wins that teachers, obviously the survey sounds like a good one. Are there other things that teachers could maybe do in the autumn term to improve things?
So I think there are quick wins, and I would really urge people not to be starting from scratch, because there's lots of great information out there. Mentally Healthy Schools, from Education Support, an incredible charity to support staff wellbeing. There's some great resources that you can download. So yeah, measurement would be one. I'd be really urging people to think, is there someone in your school that's leading on mental health? So most schools now are looking at having a senior mental health leader. We know that the government green paper has recommended that all schools have a senior leader on mental health. I would be hoping that schools have got at least someone coordinating mental health, but maybe a small working group that are looking at mental health across the piece, but also staff mental health. Looking at policy, again, have you got a good staff mental health policy? Is that communicated? Is it embedded? Are you reviewing that? Again, on our website, we've got some templates that you can look at, and you can look at other good practice so that you can learn what other people are doing. So I think there's lots of quick wins. I think what I would be asking schools to think about is, how are you looking at a whole school approach? What are you doing to embed good mental health across your whole school? So staff wellbeing is a foundation, and what are the other things that you are doing to really embed good mental health? I also would urge schools to really just talk about it, like have the conversation. I think that one of the barriers that we see often is that still teachers feel reticent to have those conversations. They feel concerned. We saw in the Education Support Teacher Wellbeing Index that 57% of staff still said they didn't want to talk to their employee about their stress levels or about their well-being. So we need to do something about shifting that culture and opening the conversations. So I would really be urging people to be more open, making sure we have mental health on the agenda of staff meetings, that it's on there in your one-to-one catch-ups, that governors are talking about mental health, that you have a well-being governor that's thinking and talking about the mental health of the school. There's some lovely ideas. I was in a school that had this huge notice board in the centre of the school, and I completely loved it because it was called How Are We Looking After Our Wellbeing? And it had pictures of all different teachers doing something that they did that helped their wellbeing. And it really sparked conversations. And children and young people really liked it because they'd say, oh, look, there's Mr. Jones. He does baking for his wellbeing. And it was a starting point of a conversation. So making it visual, having wellbeing in, you know, notice boards, making sure that you're really signposting what are the routes for your staff for well-being. Who can they talk to internally? Who can they talk to externally? So just making sure it's part of your culture, because once you open up those conversations and everyone's talking about well-being, that's when we maybe start to shift things, because we all have mental health, so we all need to talk about it.
That's it. It's making well-being part of the conversation when things are good, not just when things have gone badly, and just being transparent. We were talking to Willem Kuyken a couple of weeks ago, and he mentioned that whole school culture of well-being and how that should involve the governors right down to the children. And I think,
yeah, 100%. So it should be, so a whole school approach I really like. I like a whole community approach, because you've got to include parents and carers. They are a big stakeholder in schools. You have to bring them on the journey. Governors, 100%. Your staff, your children, young people, everyone should be involved. So staff champions around mental health, brilliant. Also, I know some schools that have got wellbeing champions among their pupils. Fantastic. You know, bringing parents into the conversation. So any work that you start in school, that you're translating that back home, so those conversations continue at home. That's how we're going to make a change with the whole community.
So if a leader goes back in September, he starts to measure staff wellbeing and get some good internal data on how staff are feeling. How have you seen schools action the sort of next steps? How do you sort of translate that data into meaningful actions and initiatives?
Yeah, so every school is going to be different. So I think it's important to, first of all, include staff in that conversation. So share back the findings and make sure that people are understanding what the findings are, and then they can be part of the solution, because I think it needs to be collaborative. And I think it will look different in different schools. So I have, I'm thinking of an example of a school that we work with quite closely, where staff were experiencing, I think, feelings of isolation and dealing with quite challenging issues and feeling like they were dealing with them on their own. And there's quite a lot of discussion, I think, around supervision for teachers and for school leaders and what that might look like and how, you know, teachers don't traditionally have supervision. And I think supervision in its purest sense is clearly often a space that's facilitated by a mental health professional, for example, and it's a one-to-one collaborative space where you can think together about a problem. And some schools buy supervision in. Obviously, it comes at a cost. And this school that we worked with wanted to think about how they could maybe provide more of sort of peer-reflective spaces so that people could be brought together to share problems, which I think is a really fantastic idea and feels more manageable. So these peer groups were set up, and you know, they're groups that have boundaries that are predictable. They meet regularly and, you know, they have some clear boundaries around how they're set up and some rules. But essentially, it's a shared space. It's a space where people can come together and talk about an issue, talk about a problem that they're experiencing with a pupil or a class, and just feel that they're not on their own with it. And it's more of a collaborative position where you can share ideas, you can maybe step back and think about things that you've done in the past or strategies you can learn from others about how you might approach things in a more, you know, a holistic space. And it was a space where teachers felt that they could feel listened to, that they could feel supported, that in a non-judgmental space where they could just share learning and share good practice. And I really like the idea of that. And I think that brings staff together to support each other. So that was one example that came out of a school when the leader said, what would work for you? And that was something that came out. So it all looked different in different places. I think, you know, some schools I know that really celebrate well-being. They have staff well-being weeks. They have more recognition through newsletters. There are lots of different things that schools can do that will make a real difference. And you need to learn what it is going to be for your staff, I think. And the starting point is asking them.
Have you seen... I guess you've probably seen schools that have implemented the surveys and the data. And how does that sort of work across a few years? I guess you sort of benchmark initially, and then a school's able to accurately tell what's making a difference and what's not. Would you implement things slowly, I guess, and see what helps? I guess there can be other things as well going on during the school year. Exam results or exam periods might be stressful. How do you... Is it hard to interpret that sort of data?
So I think, you know, if schools are going to implement something, they have to evaluate it. That's really important. And I think often I might have a conversation with the school leaders that are buying in interventions that are often quite expensive and trying lots of different things, but not always evaluating the impact. That's really important. We need to evaluate if what you're buying in is actually doing what you want it to do. Is it actually making the difference that you'd like it to do? And so evaluation is key. And again, I would really urge people not to start from scratch. We have so many different resources to support schools with evaluation, because at the Aaron and Freud Centre, you know, we have a large research and academic department who do this every day. This is what they do. They're evaluators. So we've adapted our work so that schools can use it to evaluate interventions and evaluate new things. So we've got a whole pack. So I would really urge people to look at our website to think about evaluation. What I would like to see schools doing is a coordinated response. So it goes back to what we talked about, that whole school approach, that whole community approach. So maybe instead of doing things in isolation, having a coordinated whole school approach. And that is something that I think most of us are in agreement about, that schools should have a whole approach. And at the Anna Freud Centre, we have the 5 steps framework, and we've identified 5 areas that schools might want to think about in terms of mental health. Clearly, the foundation is staff wellbeing, but also thinking about leadership, thinking about how you're promoting well-being across the curriculum and in all of your work, thinking about measurement, thinking about working with other stakeholders. So there are a whole range of things that schools should be doing. And if they do it in a whole school approach, it's easier then to kind of track your change and to build it into your school improvement plan, I think.
Definitely, yeah. You've mentioned some really nice examples. Have you... What else? And your 5 steps, are there any other things that you think are really sort of outstanding case studies from schools that you've been working with in terms of perhaps leadership initiatives right down to sort of things in the classroom?
So I think it goes back to what we talked about earlier, when we're seeing it from a leadership level, but going all the way through. So yeah, starting at governors. So schools that have got a staff wellbeing governor, I think we're seeing real change then, because that's changing in terms of leadership. And I think leaders that are thinking about a shift in culture and thinking about how they're rebalancing their schools to make sure that mental health feels as important as other elements. I think with, you know, I'd be looking at schools that are thinking about policy and embedding it at that kind of higher level, but then also including everyone. So there's a school that we've worked with that has a wellbeing action group that includes everyone. It includes senior teachers, but also support staff and also young people and also parents. So making sure that it really feels collaborative and how you're bringing everyone on the journey. But yeah, there's some fantastic work that's taking place out there. And I think people don't hear about it enough. There are schools that are really making a difference. So we do try to collect those case studies, and yeah, people can check out our website and read some of them.
Yeah, you've mentioned the website, lots of resources out there. Are there any particular signposts you'd point people towards in September for leaders who might be taking the initiative when it comes to wellbeing?
So I would say look at the Anna Freud website, 100%, because we've got lots of information on there. The Mentally Healthy Schools website collects resources from across the whole mental health sector. And these are resources that have been quality assured. And so on the Mentally Healthy Schools website, what's fantastic about it is that we only have resources on there that are a trusted resource, that have an evidence base, that have been quality assured. So anything on there is, you know you can trust it. And we've created some toolkits. So there's a really lovely toolkit that we've made around how to run a wellbeing inset day. So if that's something you wanted to focus on in September, or you just wanted to have a little bit of work on one of your inset days around wellbeing, you could check that out. It's got some great resources about what you could do to bring everyone on that journey that you can just download and use in your inset day. It'll really help with planning, I think. And I would really urge people to go to Education Support's website. If people don't know, they're a charity that supports teachers and school leaders. We think they're brilliant. We work with them quite a lot. We partner with them on some things. We're huge admirers, but they have lots of resources, but they also have a helpline that you can phone up if you're a teacher and you're struggling or you need some support. And yeah, I would really signpost to them. They're brilliant.
Great stuff. And for the teachers out there who might be listening, if they're going back into sort of September and a normal, hopefully normal school year, they're feeling a little bit anxious about it, are there places that they can turn to and on your website and elsewhere?
So again, Education Support are brilliant. I would really urge teachers to talk to each other and to talk to their school leaders. We need to start trying to open up those conversations. I know that there are some schools that have got buddy systems, which I really like, where teachers are buddied up, so they've got someone that they can talk to and share problems with. We talk a lot about trying to have work-life balance and leave things in school. So the idea of debrief and dispatch. So you have a chat to someone and then you leave it at school and you don't take it home with you. So thinking about what you can do in your school to look after your mental health and implement some self-care strategies that you can do. Work out what works for you. What is your self-care strategy? And again, we've got lots of ideas on the site. But making sure that you're taking care of yourself. And, you know, I see schools that are putting in some great initiatives, schools that have, for example, a school that I know that did a quick survey of what should we stop, what should we continue, and what can we start. And out of that, some discussions came around, well, maybe we could think about emails and turn off the email service. So I know schools that don't have emails after 6 o'clock and they turn it off over the weekend. I know schools that have thought about what meetings they really need and what are the vital ones, what can you stop? And so there are just small initiatives that might help schools to think about reducing workload. So I know that DfE have got these resources, the workload reduction toolkits, which there's quite a few of them that look at different elements of workload. There's one that looks at kind of marking policies, for example. And I would encourage schools to look at those because they're packs of resources that schools can download and use. They have surveys, they have different resources that you can use to think exactly about that, about how you want to reduce workload in different areas. So I would encourage schools to take a look at that because that might be helpful. And I know other schools that have used them that they found helpful, particularly around marking. I know schools have implemented some of that about reduction in marking, and they found those toolkits have been useful.
Great. Thanks, Jamie. Really appreciate your time today. It's been really useful speaking to you.
Lovely to chat. Thank you.